Estate Radio, Chaz Cook and Mary Pula of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. And a little bit later on this finally sunny Saturday, we will have Mr. Byron Lazine joining us. But first, I want to welcome Mary back to the show. Mary, how's it going?
Well, it is definitely interesting, Chaz. It's it's active. You know, it's boots on the ground. It's writing paper. It's we're busy. It's not always as productive as we'd like just by virtue of outcome, but it's all part of the process. And I think that's part of what we're talking about today, the unique dynamic to the whole thing and applicable strategies and, you know, the market as it relates to prior markets. And it's busy, though. It's real busy. It's hard for many agents to justify, though, because you are busy. And like I said, the outcome, you might get one in five, right?
Right. Yeah. Sometimes it definitely feels like we're running on the hamster wheel and, you know, not getting anywhere with it.
Yeah, for sure.
I have a quick question for you. So I didn't see much of a slowdown, but did you notice anything this past week with all of the smoke and everything going on coming down from Canada and the air quality? Did that have any kind of deterrent in the market that you saw?
No, not visibly speaking. That's a pun on the no. No, actually, no, to be honest with you. It was a bit of a you know, conversation, certainly. And I guess if you had some clients that were physically affected by it, we had to be conscious of it. But because if they were out and about, you know, and they were a little bit compromised, obviously that was a consideration. But for the most part, no, it really, it didn't, just breeds a little mystery. Everybody's wondering, you know.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, and I know it impacted a lot of schools and those end of the year celebrations, field days, tournaments, right, things like that. And I'm not a weatherman, but from what I understand, the fire came down from Canada and then there was like a cold front right along the shore. Mm-hmm. It was stalled and essentially creating like a barrier, which was not letting the smoke finish clearing out. And I know, you know, where we live up in Niantic, it was always a little cooler, a little easier to breathe and a little brighter, right, down by the beach. So yep, it's just interesting to kind of see. And I know that a lot of businesses, especially on like Main Street and Niantic, felt a little bit of that impact as well, with people just not wanting to be out walking around quite as much.
Right. Well, and the radio kept reminding us, and rightfully so, you know, if you're compromised, be careful. Or anybody, even if you weren't, they were advising we don't sit outside in it. And so that did affect vendors that are, you know, usually enjoy outside seating this time of year. And you, yep, do feel for them.
Absolutely.
And it's cool too. There's a dampness in the air and I don't know if that's associated with it, but I think most of us are just feeling a little ignorant to the fact that Canada's experienced these fires, I guess, for years, but the, right, difference this year is rather significant. And I think it's going to ultimately bring us all back to the conversation of change. I mean, even look at our climate or our weather pattern prior to this even ensuing, we had cooler temperatures. You know, we have spurts of rain that just seem to never give up. And I feel like the summer's delayed by about a month.
Yeah, you know, I like the way that you put that, because I want to talk to you about change specifically in the real estate market. You know, I didn't really see a spring market hit. It was almost middle of January, you know, the floodgates opened and we have been nonstop since then, rather than our traditional kind of mid-February to March buildup and then March, April, May. Do you think, based off of your experience, that now that we are finally starting to get some of those actual warmer temperatures that normally would have hit, say, 6 weeks ago, that that's going to lead to an uptick in inventory?
I'm not sure the temperature will complement the sizzle of the market, mm-hmm, which is an interesting correlation, because in prior years, we used to put mailers out that said, you know, the market's heating up, it's summer and all that. Well, the market's been hot and, you know, so the sizzle remains. I think the inventory, we're starting to see more come on, which is helpful, but we're still nowhere near what's considered the norm, right, for an average inventory basis of 6 months. I don't even project seeing that happening. So we're still seeing the multiple bids if the product is well-priced and presented. So the I'm not really seeing a change. You're right. I think what happened with the spring market was that it sort of absorbed itself with an already consistently hot market.
Correct.
So that, yeah, it was really difficult to discern any real change. In fact, we still have clients that ask, you know, what's the optimal time of year to come on? Well, frankly, when your house is ready, it's okay. And for most people. And it's rare. It's an exception. I mean, the years of the academic entry, you know, when it had to be just when school end and school starts, that's sort of been muted by other market circumstances that eclipse that. So the, you know, May 1st used to be the international entry date for real estate. We still see some of that, but quite frankly, it's really when the property's ready and the people are ready. Which brings us to the whole other discussion, because there's inventory that could come on, but isn't coming on, because if there isn't a replacement for the people to move to, they're not going to, you know, put their property on the market.
Well, that's a perfect point. And you and I were talking about this a few weeks back. It's, you know, it's usually we're in kind of a buyer's market or a seller's market, or maybe sometimes even in a neutral market. But right now, sellers want to sell, but they don't want to either leave their 3% or less interest rate, or they don't want to have to go and compete and fight. And buyers, we've had the pent-up buyers for coming on 3 years now, they need that inventory. So we're in a bit of a stalemate. You know, I think I joked when we spoke a couple weeks ago that it was like a nobody market, but stalemate is a much better term for, you know, the listeners to understand that we're got to find a way to get something to give a little bit. And you've continued to be able to put listings on the market. How are you having those conversations with your sellers, and what is their strategy once their house goes under contract?
Well, in fairness, my inventory is way down as well from what it historically would be. And many times I'm speaking to people a year before they're even coming on the market.
Okay.
It's a strategy. It's a whole discussion of what do you see in your future? You know, what's the end game from the move? Because that's critical to leaving your nest, because where are you going next? And I'm seeing more inventory come on, and I'm looking at the disclosures, and I'm seeing the years people have been in the house, and I'm seeing more and more that have been in 20 plus years. So for them, they're probably saying, you know what, it's a good time to cash out, because maybe they were going to make a significant move, even if it's out of state or a significant downsize. They're recognizing that it's almost like the stock is peaking, and they want to take advantage of that. And they have the financial ability to do that, be very realistic hitting the market, and probably in a great equity position to maybe already have made a purchase so that that move is smooth. Because in the perfect world, when you're sitting down, it depends on the category of seller you're sitting down with. If they are in the fortunate position of being able to make a purchase, I have a house coming on in Eastline the next few weeks that they are going to Virginia. They made that purchase. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is cemented. They're going to close the end of June. So there won't be any inconvenience to them when they come on the market around here. The furnishings will already be sort of on the truck. The stress will be calibrated by the fact they've made that big purchase, that transitional move, because they have the financial ability to do it.
Right.
So important to talk about what your options are if you are going to sell, and what your options aren't if you're going to sell. And one of the hardest moves has been the folks that just want a little modest downsizing home. You know, how many times a week do you hear, I just want a small ranch, or I want a one floor condo? They almost don't exist.
Right.
They're spartanly available. Cool. So it's
an interesting point, because I want to, when we come back, I want to talk to you about who the biggest buyer class is right now, because I think the people who are looking for that style of home are right in the middle of that buyer class. And it may actually be a little surprising. I'm not sure if you've read the latest reports on that, but we're going to dive back into that. And I think I just saw Mr. Byron Lazine walk in, and he's going to join us when we continue our conversation with Mary Pula of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate when we come back on Real Estate Radio 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk.
With Father's Day coming up fast,
Real Estate Radio 94.9 News Now, Stimulating Talk. Byron Lazine, Chaz Cook, and Mary Pula of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. Sorry about the delay on my end. Contractors are an interesting breed these days, and if you get a good one, you've got to jump when they need you. There's only one contractor that you should use when it comes to residential oil tanking, though, and that's Service Station Equipment. Service Station Equipment is your residential tank specialist. Of course, they just pulled an oil tank out of property that I rehabbed in Old Lyme. They are quick. They go by all the state compliances. You get Dougie Braun, the tank man, to come down and check out your oil tanking needs at 1-800-801-TANK. 1-800-801-TANK. Call Dougie Braun and the service station team for your residential oil tanking needs. And if you've yet to do it, fill up your pool with their sister company, Irish Springs Pool Water. Will come right to the house. Fill up the pool. The summer is here. Get that thing filled up and cleaned. Irish Springs Pool Water. Call them today for your pool water needs. All right, Chaz, bring me up to speed here with you and Mary.
Mary and I were just discussing different strategies that she utilizes with some of her sellers in this market when it can be quite challenging to have somewhere to go after. And she was talking about how a lot of people have been looking for that single level, maybe ranch style house, Cape style house with a primary bedroom on the first floor. And I was asking her if she had done much study on who like the biggest buyer population right now, and that being the young boomers, people ages 54 to 60 who are looking to downsize into some of those houses Mary was alluding to.
There was just a survey that came out. 64% of Americans are waiting for rates to drop to buy. Okay, so out of this survey that's being done, it's obviously a convenient excuse, but I think what the point that Mary's making is, okay, I could say I'll wait till rates drop because I believe that there's going to be more options for me on the market of what I'm looking for. What this survey tells me that, you know, isn't in the headline is that there's a lot of interest for people to make a move if the right house at the right number presented itself. But there's a lot of wait and see going on. It's certainly the agent's job to over-educate the opportunities that are on the MLS, off the MLS, and then just ways to get creative to be able to, you know, if you're selling, get that equity now and maybe make a move into a rental for the time being. But I agree with Mary. There's just not enough desirable product on the market. We're sitting at 2 months of inventory for single-family homes in Connecticut in May. It was 2.1 months of inventory last May. Right. So it's only actually getting a little bit harder, not easier. Mary, I'd be curious to know what you think about inventory in where you think it's heading in July, August, and September. Typically, those are the months where it will go up before it pulls back down. You know, as we get closer to the holidays, people pull their homes off the market. Can we get over 3 months of inventory in July or August? Do you think that's even possible?
Wow. I think that what I'm starting to see, and even today, the listings that was a little bit stronger on the upload, but then the question is, how long does it sustain itself? They're going very quickly, typically speaking. Not every home, but many are still enjoying the benefit of 4 to 6, 7, 8 offers at minimum, right? So I honestly think we're going to stay relatively stable. There's certain pockets where sellers are sitting back going, wow, I can't believe that guy down the street just got that. What that does do is it does initiate some thought, water orientated properties, for instance. Some of these are just hitting numbers we didn't expect even down here. And people are saying, my God, if they got that, maybe I should try and jump in, especially if it's a secondary property. So you might see those folks enter in on the basis of speculation somewhat saying, hey, if I get this kind of number, I'm out of here. But I think for the most part, we're going to see, I don't think we're going to break 3 months. And historically, summers, we slow down a little bit because people get distracted with vacations. They would go away late July, August, in the heat of it before, you know, they ramp up again. And I'm not sure that their eyes are going to be off the ball this season because the consequence is they may lose an option. So, no, I'm not hopeful that we're going to break 3 month inventory.
Last year, the peak was in July. That was 2.6 months of inventory for single-family homes. This is statewide, according to the CT MLS. And that was the highest we got. 6 months of inventory is what you would consider, you know, a normal market where neither buyers nor sellers really have the advantage over the other. Certainly, when you're under 6 months like we are today, you have an advantage to the sellers. In almost every price category, in almost every town, there are outliers in every, you know, situation. It may be a property that can't be financed, might even out a little bit, although there are a lot of cash buyers. In fact, we have one-third of transactions are cash buyers today, which is the highest level in 9 years. That was just reported earlier in the week. So, I think three would be a stretch. It'd be a welcome sign to home shoppers, but I would agree it's probably a stretch just based off of where we are right now and the trend that we saw last year being the high of 2.6.
You'd have to go back to November 2020 to see the last time we had 3.1 months of supply. Since okay. November 2020, mm-hmm. we have not gotten above 2.6 months.
Right.
And as Byron mentioned, right now we sit at 2.
I remember looking at numbers in the double digits in 2012 and 2013. When we tell that to a newer agent that those were some of the numbers, they actually don't even believe you. They can't. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Double digit months of inventory.
Yeah. Well, it for those who have been through it, it was. I mean, there were some towns that were at 2 years in the
2 years
out. Yeah.
Wow.
And actually, Salem, Connecticut was one of them at one point.
Yeah.
It was 18 to 24 months on a rather consistent basis at times. But just as one town, and this is going back, of course, you know, it's different. But we also have this issue of the rental market being equally strong and equally paltry in opportunity. So even if someone says, look, I've had one or two people say, maybe I should just sell the house. I'll take an interim rent and I'll sit on my money. I'm not keen on that in many instances. And this goes back to the whole conversation initially, Chaz, where it's like we have a great responsibility when we sit down with people. We go over options. Ultimately, the choice is theirs. But I think one of the reasons where the more experienced agents are even void of inventory they used to have is it's very concerning, and I feel professionally responsible when you're giving advice to say, hey, I'm not so sure that's the smart thing to do. I have a couple who love them dearly. I just sold their home a handful of months ago. And they chose, they're well into their 90s, let's be diplomatic. And now they're calling me and they want to buy again. And I'm like, guys, no, I don't see this. And I'm trying to talk these folks out of trying to buy something.
Wow.
And partially it's because the options for folks that are in the more of sunset years, they're terrible, short of assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
And they just feel forced into going, they needed to get there to the big place, but where do they go now? And it's a real, it's a concern. And we can't breed options, but we can discuss options. Even considering relocating closer to your son, is that not an option? You know, because maybe the options will be greater there. You know, we need to talk about all of these things. So it's not about necessarily gaining the sale or acquiring the listing. It's about counseling where beyond that they go. And that's even applicable to the young couple that's in the two bedroom that wants to get the four bedroom because their family's growing. I don't want them to give up the two bedroom house quite yet, but it is difficult to bid if you have a contingency. So now we work it out that you don't have a contingency and let's try to factor in if you rented this home, which you're going to get a good rent. Now that produces income on your qualification sheet, which may enhance your ability to do a more aggressive overbid if you choose to do it on a specific property. So because when you're not going to win, to your point earlier, if a third of the deals are cash, which speaks to the fact that people are evaluating whether they keep their money in certain investments or they pull it out so that they can be the better, bigger buyer by perception. And I think some people are saying it's time, I'm going to cash out because I'm only getting... You know, the market's been a little bumpy the past couple of quarters. So if people are only pulling in 3-4%, you know, they might just say, you know what, it's okay, but it's not really doing me all that well. I'd be a better buyer by taking that money out. And so people are doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. A third of new home purchases are cash. And right now across America, 42% of single family homes do not have a mortgage on them. So for all the doom and gloomers who believe there's going to be a 20% cliff on home prices, you can count out the 42% of homeowners that don't have a mortgage. They have no incentive to take a haircut. So you've only got 58% of homes that even have a mortgage, and about 70% of those have a 2 or a 3 on their interest rate. So they're not paying today's numbers. And Mary, to your point about rents being strong, you're absolutely right. While nationwide rents declined 1% from a year earlier in May, good news for inflation if the Fed's paying attention. That's good news. But that's not the case here in the Northeast. In the Northeast, they rose 5%, and the Northeast has the highest median rental price of any of the four major regions in America at $2,495. The West would be number two at $2,400, the South $1,650+, and then the Midwest is at $1,400. So Northeast and Midwest are increasing their rents right now, while the West and the nation have shown declines. The overall decline is good for what the Fed might do next week with the federal interest rate. We're hoping for a pause and we could slow this thing down with any hope. All right, Mary, are you taking off or are you sticking around?
If you need me, I'm here. All part of it. And, you know, to that rental point, you have now that people are, not all, but many are working remotely.
Well, Mary, this is a great point. And hold it for the next segment. You got to come back to
Mary's
rental point when we come back. Real Estate Radio 94.9 News Now, stimulating talk.
I'm Attorney John Heyman.
Real Estate Radio 94.9 News Now, stimulating talk. Byron Lazine, Chaz Cook, and Mary Poole of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. We're talking all things for the month of May. We've got the May data in for the Connecticut real estate market, as well as some national trends. The Northeast is up 5% on rentals for those that are thinking about not selling their home and renting, which is a lot of folks. It's been holding up inventory. They're getting the highest rent across the nation right now in the Northeast. And Mary, you had a point on that right before the break.
Well, I think part of the stimulant in that is the fact that if people can work remotely, they can choose to. We were pretty undervalued in Southeastern Connecticut, not only from a price perspective or price pulse point with housing, it also applied to the rental market. And because, for instance, our sister state there in Massachusetts, you just go up there and, you know, young people would have had to pay, you know, $1,500 more at least for the same product. So what happened is when we started to get a more of a virtual attention across the board, someone could say, hey, I can be down here. And then you're seeing these larger apartment buildings and complexes being built, and they're filling it with some of these young aspirings that just like, hey, I'm saving rent coming down here, and it's a nice coastal place, and I'm working virtually. So even though, and I don't mean to downplay Boston, my daughter's there herself, but, you know, that's a heavy hitter there for rent. So if they can come here, save a grand to 1500, you know, that certainly helps matters. So it's been the perfect storm of issue that everybody has to address. So we're talking about all of our populations. If an alternative, even if it's an interim to rent when one sells before they purchase, all of those things have become more challenged due to the rentals being so much of a stronger plate. So it's you can't just promise someone they're going to find a nice rental when they sell their home, because that's irresponsible. They're just not that prevalent.
Yeah, the discussion has to be about, are you willing to have living conditions that may be well below what you just had? Mm-hmm. And not a lot of people are willing to do that, but you have to be real. You can't, to your point, you can't promise a scenario that they're walking away from is going to be available in the rental market and affordable. And that's often not the case. You can find a rent. It just might not be the living conditions that are, you know, reflective of the lifestyle you are walking out of. And a lot of people are not willing to make that decision. It's like that, you know, that single person who's like, ah, I want to grind out some savings for the next year. And I'm willing to live in a one bedroom that, you know, wherever type of thing. It's not advice for everybody. Mary, to your point about the work from home stuff, Northeast also leads the four regions in where you can still find a work from home job. Obviously, there's been a lot of, you know, pullback in some California companies like Facebook and and Twitter, where they're bringing people back into the office. The Northeast is still has the highest percentage of job openings offering flexible work. It's above the West, the South, and the Midwest. So the Northeast is a leader in work from home opportunities. And that's, to your point, I think that has been one of the biggest factors in Connecticut home values staying not only up, but above our pandemic peak as we sit here today. Mm-hmm. Because of this work from home flexibility. For years, I heard sellers say, you know, just find me a buyer from New York. It's like, yeah, maybe, but they can't commute from Old Lyme to New York City. They could come out and spend a weekend. So if you can find someone that wants to do a vacation home, but you're not finding a commuter really east of Milford when you're talking about the Connecticut shoreline. That's basically the cutoff. You know, people in New Haven don't even want to really commute. So now if I'm going into New York maybe one day a week or even two, heck, Stonington becomes an option.
Right.
Like anywhere on the shoreline, realistically, if we're talking one or two days into Manhattan, is an option.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be less emphasis on New York City, not just in the moment, but I think that consistent issues there, you know, of political trends and choices that are being made, I think it's driving people to want to stay in other places longer. And if they have to go into the city, they'll do it, but they're shortening their interest in being there.
There's a study a couple weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal that, and I don't know how they model this thing out, but what they're projecting is that by 2029, office buildings in New York City will have dropped 44% in value by the year 2029. So that's just over the next 5-6 years.
Yep.
You'll see almost a, you know, one half reduction in office building values. And you think about what that's going to do to, you know, the properties surrounding it, right?
Right.
You know, certainly if you're not needing to physically be in that office, you're not needing that shoebox apartment that's two blocks away. And so, yeah, Mary, I think you probably see a stronger suburb market for the foreseeable future.
Exactly. And that every week with a new situation in New York, that just keeps adding to the, you know, potential problem they're going to have. But maybe some aspiring entrepreneur will take those office spaces and convert them into apartments for living. Who knows?
I think that's the most practical choice, right?
I would think so.
They started doing that in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't love about it is it costs a lot of money to do. Mm-hmm. So then those units end up being in a luxury price tag a lot of times.
Yeah.
Where if you just zero these office buildings out, because a lot of people are going to foreclose on some of these office buildings in major cities, not around here. You don't have a lot of office, obviously, in most of Connecticut. But when you talk about major cities downtown that are really going to have this impact, if you zero those buildings out and the city has to take them back, then you could go ahead, get them into a developer basically at a dollar. They can go do a rehab with the condition of affordable living space. Because right now, if you go buy a building, even at a 40% haircut, like some of the buildings in San Francisco are selling at a 40% haircut, I got to go now do the renovation.
Right.
That's definitely going to be luxury category.
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, especially with like the cost of supplies and permitting and goods and, you know, the workforce, they just raised the minimum wage. So everything has gone up. So for those developers to be able to keep it in the affordable range, they're going to have to find a really, really good deal. And, you know, I'd be interested to see what the parameters were if they said, okay, you can renovate this building to make affordable housing. Can they actually say to them, you have to keep it under the median sale price of, say, $375,000?
Yeah, they can make restrictions like that if they, you know, are involved in the sale of that property to the developer, or they're opening up the, you know, the restrictions that maybe it's classified as commercial. Now you're going to make it residential. When the government gets involved or the local city or municipality gets involved on changing the codes and changing these restrictions, then they can make a mandate that says, hey, you got to sell 80% at the median income or whatever. You know, there's been plenty of deals like that over the years that some have worked out, some haven't.
They did that in Niantic over at the Cove and the Shore. They had some of those units that were workforce units.
Yeah, that was a modest introduction to that concept. But I think these cities are going to have to go in large scale to the state. So the cities are going to have to offer basically rebate programs to these developers that will allow them the opportunity to renovate them. And to Byron's point, not on a luxury level where you're really dealing with a slice of, you know, who can then ultimately rent or buy them, but turn around and maybe if you offset it with rebates in anticipation of having a ghost city, get this in the pipeline, and then maybe they can transform these buildings into better use and keep some of the youth that's making a more modest income. You know, how many people can sustain that type of luxury living? Penthouse style pricing, it's not realistic. So in the areas, though, that we have around here that have workforce, you will find when those units come in, it's not an overnight sale because you're trying to find someone that has that modest income to complement the requirements of the program. And it doesn't always work. You know, it doesn't run. The track isn't running in the same direction all the time. So.
Mary Pula, William Ravis Real Estate. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Have a great Saturday.
Always appreciate chatting with you. Everybody have a great Saturday. Chaz and I will be back with the One Team Rewind and the wrap up here on all things happening in your real estate market. Stay with us. Real Estate Radio, 94.9 News Now, and Stimulating Talk.
You've heard their ads over the past few years.
Real Estate Radio, Chaz Cook of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined for this final segment by Brian Skelly of William Ravis Mortgage, here to fill us in on a new program that they are running. But first, we have to hit up the One Team Weekly Rewind. We had 3 new listings, 16 under contract, and 9 closings. Our first new listing, I'm not going to go too far into this one because it is already under contract. 3 Fullen Road in Norwalk, Connecticut. Multifamily home hit the market for $399,000. 4 bedrooms, 2 baths. Built in 1960. This was a great property and it got snatched up quick. So congratulations to Emily and Alan on that property. Next up, we've got 60 Academy Street in Wallingford, Connecticut. This was brought to the market by Rod Cross for $515,000. 4 bedrooms, 1.5 baths. Just under 2,900 square feet and built in 1850. It's an extraordinary, rare Second Empire French mansard style home. Whew. Never heard of one of those before, but I would go and check this one out in Wallingford. It's a true architectural masterpiece nestled on an oversized lot just a few steps away from the renowned Choate Rosemary Hall School. So if you're looking in the Wallingford area and you are interested in a French mansard style home, you can reach out to Rod at oneteamct.com to schedule your private showing. Our final new listing of the week is 13 Sipples Hill Road in East Haddam, Connecticut. This hit the market for $350,000 and was brought to us by Jessica Hoover. 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, just under 1,900 square feet and built in 2006. You have a half acre lot. It is a dream home in Moody's, stunning colonial that offers an array of exquisite features, tasteful upgrades throughout, and it is sure to impress. So if you are looking in the East Haddam area, you can reach out to Jess at oneteamct.com. Under contract, 16 of them. Here we go. We had under contracts in Tallinn, Cheshire, Bethany, Waterford, Tallinn, New Haven, Kent, Ledyard, New Haven, Brantford, Westbrook, West Hartford, Deep River, Meriden, Brantford, and Norwalk. Closings. Congratulations to all of our buyers and sellers and investors. We had closings, 9 of them in Haddam, Colchester, Oxford, East Haven, North Haven, Prospect, Hamden, Ledyard, and New Haven. Whew! What a week. What a week. All right, let's wrap this up with some open houses. We got a bunch going on today. We got 4 today, Saturday, June 10th, and we got 4 tomorrow on Sunday, June 11th. First up from 12 to 3 right after the show wraps. You can go check out that new Jess Hoover listing at 13 Sipples Hill Road in East Haddam, Connecticut. That is 12 to 3 today. Then a little bit later today, from 1:30 to 3:30, you've got an opportunity to check out 2313 Durham Road in Madison. Also today, 12 to 2, 160 River Road in Shelton. That's a nice new property. That one hit for just over $400,000, so great deal down there in Shelton. And going on right now in the middle of the show, started at 11 a.m., ends at 1, 219 Haley Road in Ledyard, Connecticut. That one is also going to be going on tomorrow, Sunday, June 11th, from 11 to 1, 219 Haley Road in Ledyard, Connecticut. You can go visit Christina over at that property. That's a very unique property. That one has a three-story garage, right? So it's got a way you can pull down, almost park in the basement of the garage, the main story, and then on top of that, you have an in-law suite.
Wow.
Not to mention that there's a addition put on that was a true in-law that could also be a secondary apartment. So you could essentially have three different families living in this one property and have a four-car garage, two of them underground.
Four cars?
Four cars. So definitely reach out to Christina at oneteamct.com. If you're looking in the Ledyard area, that is 219 Haley Road, and you've got an opportunity today, Saturday from 11 to 1, and on Sunday from 11 to 1 to check that out. Also going on Sunday from 11 to 1, opportunity to check out 27 Whitney Road in Columbia, Connecticut. And from 12 to 2 on Sunday, an opportunity for 160 River Road in Shelton. I did mention that one already. I apologize. And then final opportunity for an open house from the One Team Sunday, June 11th from 12 to 3, 13 Sipples Hill Road in East Haddam. So if you can't make it there tomorrow, you can go visit Jess. Can't make it there today, you can go visit Jess tomorrow from 12 to 3. And that is going to do it for the One Team Weekly Rewind. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Brian Skelly now, because there's this new program that says you can buy a house for 1% down, and we're going to break down what that means and who is eligible for that.
Absolutely, yeah. So, it's a 1% down program. There is an income limit. You do not have to be a first-time home buyer, and it's available on loan amounts up to $350,000. Now, I know a lot of the listeners right now are saying, well, a lot of houses are over 350, and that's true. But if you go online and you adjust your search settings for up to 350, or even look up to 360, because it's the loan amount, keep in mind. So there are quite a few homes for sale in Connecticut. Can do condos also. Not multifamilies, not second homes, not investment properties. But if it's a one-unit primary residence, loan amount under $350,000, we have a new 1% down loan program.
So, and I guess this would kind of be counterintuitive, but so you're saying if the house was listed for 400, right, rather than just put 1% down, you could put $50,000 down to bring it down to 350?
That wouldn't really be a 1% down loan program if you're putting $50,000 down.
Right.
So, yes. So, you basically need a price to be like under 360 in order to kind of be eligible for this program.
Okay.
We have other programs, of course, somebody could do if they have $50,000 to put down. You got a few more options to pick from.
And so we want to talk about which counties in Connecticut. It is based off a county, the income, correct?
Right, yeah. So I don't remember if I said that or not, but there is an income limit that's based on the county. And if you haven't heard, there's several loan programs that have income limits, or you can get discounts on the rates if you're either under this is on several programs. If you're under 100% of the income and you're a first-time home buyer on a regular conventional loan, you get a discount on the rate. As of Monday, June 12th, we're using the new 2023 median income, which has gone up quite a bit. For example, New Haven County had one of the largest increases. The median income in New Haven County went up $11,600 last year. Pretty big increase. So to be eligible for the 1% down program, your income needs to be less than 80% of the median income. So in New Haven County, that's going to be $88,000. Middlesex and Hartford County.
In New Haven County.
This is
a great one for that, because the median sales price for a single family home for all of New Haven County, $355,000.
Oh, perfect.
So ideal for someone looking in the New Haven County area.
Yeah. I mean, especially condos. Think about how many condos there are for under 360 in New Haven County. It's quite a few.
Right. And now you're going to go to Middlesex County?
Yeah, we're going to go to Middlesex next. So Middlesex, median income in Middlesex from 2022 to 2023 went up by 5,500. The new median income is 118,700. So if you're under that, you get the first-time buyer discount. But to be eligible for the 1% down program, you got to make less than 94,960.
And that's going to be a little bit tougher in Middlesex County because the median sales price for single-family homes for Middlesex County, for all of Middlesex County, is $405,000. So
yeah, now keep in mind, there's a few, if you're talking with a good, you know, mortgage lender, there's some techniques that we can do to try and kind of get people into these programs. So, for example, if there's, you know, if you're married and there's two of you, we could potentially do just one person on the loan application.
All right.
And also for this particular 1% down program, for example, if you do have bonus income or commission income, but we don't need that to get approved, we can do that as well. So like if somebody has a salary of $90,000, but maybe they make $20,000 a year in bonus, you know, if you're listening, you say, oh, I don't qualify because I make $110,000, you might qualify. So give me a call. I'll be happy to run the numbers for you. I'm going to plug my website.
Yeah, schedulealoanappointment.com.
Schedulealoanappointment.com. So, yeah, if you want to run your specific numbers, go through your income, see what programs are eligible, schedulealoanappointment.com.
And now I know a good majority of our listeners, the 94.9ers out there, are from New London County. So London. I've got the median sales price ready, but why don't you hit us with the income limits first?
Absolutely.
And then I'll let you know what the median sales price is.
The median income in New London went up $8,400 from 2022 to 2023. The new median income is $114,400. So if you're under that, you can get the first-time buyer rate discount. But to be eligible for the 1% down option, it's going to be $91,520. It's 80% of the median income in New London County.
$91,520. And the median sales price for single-family homes for all of New London County coming in at $340,000. So,
all right.
New Haven County, New London County, we are talking to you guys. You need to reach out to Brian Skelly at schedulealoanappointment.com. Talk to him about these programs. These are right in your wheelhouse. I want to look at Hartford County because Hartford itself, Hartford the city, has been getting a lot of talk about prices going up, about the hottest markets in the country. So why don't we break down for the listeners what they're looking at in terms of income and price point?
Yeah, definitely. I have had several buyers looking at Hartford County, and it's certainly a popular area. All right, so median income in Hartford County went up $5,500, not quite as much, but still went up. The new median income for Hartford County is $118,700. So if you're under that and you're a first-time home buyer, you do get a rate discount. In order to be eligible for the 1% down program, you're going to need to be under $94,960, which is same as Middlesex County, same number.
And so the median sales price for single-family homes for all of Hartford County is a little higher than Middlesex, but still in the wheelhouse at $351,000. So yep. New Haven, New London, Hartford County, we're talking to you guys. This program is meant for people who are looking for a home in those different counties.
Yeah, and then we got to do Fairfield because Fairfield's the outlier.
Oh, yeah.
That's where the high income is.
Let's have some fun with that one.
That's for fun. We got some listeners from Fairfield driving through Eastern Connecticut, listening to us right now.
Heading to the seaport because the sun is finally shining this weekend.
There you go. So let's see. Fairfield County median income went up $6,900. It's now $142,800. So that's if you're under that, you get the first-time buyer rate discount. To be eligible for the 1% down, you're going to be 80% of that. That's $114,240 in Fairfield County.
I got to break it to you guys out there, though. Even if you are under that 80% value, the median sales price for single-family homes in Fairfield County is $724,000.
It varies a lot by town. So, like, you know, if you look at, like,
based off of the county, correct?
Well, median's for the whole – yeah, the income's for the county.
Oh, okay.
You know, but I'm just saying, like, sales price varies a lot by town, you know, so – like Shelton, Monroe, Trumbull are going to probably have a lower median price, I would guess, compared to like Westport, Fairfield, and that kind of thing.
Right, so you got to find the outliers.
There's a lot of variety in housing choices in Fairfield County.
Absolutely. So don't rule out Fairfield County, but definitely if you are looking in the New Haven, New London, or Hartford County, you need to reach out to Brian Skelly at schedulealoanappointment.com. He will walk you through all the steps of this program. And if you would like to reach me this weekend, you can reach me at chaz@oneteamct.com, or you can shoot me a text, 860-575-4962. Thank you, 94.9ers. Thank you, Service Station Equipment. Thank you, Mike. That is going to do it for us. We will be back next Saturday with a fresh new episode of Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk.
Salon Buick GMC.